Here we go.
This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
The Milwaukee Bucks won Game 4 of the NBA Finals last night. The series is now tied 2-2, and a tied 2-2 series sure sounds a lot better than going down 3-1, headed back to Phoenix for Game 5, does it not? Last night's game was a fun game to watch. It was, I think, a competitive game. I think it was an entertaining game. I don't think it was the best game played. It was the best played game, I should say. There were tons of great moments. But there were... like, if this were a hockey game, Dennis, I think we would call this kind of a grindy game.
Yeah.
Kind of a slog. And, I mean, we ended up with a final...
greasy goals, Alec.
We ended up with a final score in the hundreds. 109-103 was the final score. But there were a lot of points in the game where the basketball was ugly. There were points down the last few minutes where the basketball was ugly. And both teams now have held serve on home court. I think we are in for a seven-game series.
Well, Alec, the series hasn't officially started yet because home teams won each game, right?
Exactly. This is kind of like the Masters doesn't start until the back nine on Sunday, right?
Exactly.
So we head back to Phoenix for Game 5. Which will be, I believe, on Saturday night. I'd have to actually double-check that. There's a lot of noise going on my computer right now.
I was going to say, where's that coming from?
There was a lot of talk after games 1 and 2 about whether Phoenix was going to sweep the series, because those are the kinds of knee-jerk reactions that we have. And actually, we're going to get a little bit more into those later in the hour, because there were a few out there after last night's game that I kind of was like, eh. I don't know about that, but it's what we do. I understand. It's the world of sports media where we have to have these really polarizing debates about everything all the time. But the Bucks have basically made their game about Giannis and Chris Middleton. Probably a smart decision on their part, but I almost kind of feel like Jrue Holiday has sort of faded into the background for the Milwaukee Bucks, and maybe that's a good thing for them. But there's been a lot of talk about Coach Bud and making adjustments and things like that, and I'll check in with Brendan Whitted about this at 1:15, but I think he's made some adjustments. I think he's made some adjustments in who he is relying on to get this job done, because it is clearly, I think, in the last two games been about Giannis and Chris Middleton working that pick and roll. And Chris Middleton comes up with the game that we have sort of been waiting for him to have for a while now. The Phoenix Suns had a 9-point lead to start the fourth quarter after Cam Johnson nailed a three to make it 85-76. And then the Bucks just kind of chipped away in the fourth. It was 87-81. I talked about some of the sort of sloppy-ish play that happened. It was 87-81 for about a minute and a half. Both teams kind of scrambling around for a little bit. Chris Paul hit a jumper to make it 89-82 at one point. Then the Bucks started to close the gap. Chris Middleton scored 10 straight points starting at the 2:07 mark of the fourth quarter. With 2:07 remaining, I should say. He gave the Bucks a 105-99 lead, and the game was pretty much out of reach for Phoenix at that point. And in the middle of that scoring stretch for Middleton was the biggest play of the game, when Giannis recovered on a pick and roll action from Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton and rose up to take a bucket away.
Now Booker with Tucker on him, throws it up for Ayton. Shot blocked by Antetokounmpo. What a block from Giannis.
It was a huge play. It was a two-point game at that point. I believe it was 101-99 with 1 minute and 14 seconds left to go in the game. And Phoenix never recovered after that play. There were two plays that really stood out to me. That play and then Chris Paul fumbling the basketball on an ensuing offensive possession. I think that came after. I can't remember when exactly those two plays happened. But that was sort of the night for Chris Paul, right? He did not play well. More on that in just a couple of minutes. But Giannis makes the pivotal play of the game, maybe the pivotal play of the series with that block. Here's Giannis after the game on what he saw on the block.
Just a hustle play. I thought I'm going to get dunked on, to be honest with you. But, you know, going down the stretch, just do whatever, you know, it takes to win the game. You know, just put yourself in a position that can win the game.
It was a huge play. It was an amazing play. I'm not, you know, Giannis hurt himself in the last series. I don't think he is 100% healthy. But he has been an absolute beast. Only 26 points for him last night. And I say only because it's relative to Giannis. But that defensive play is another reason why Giannis is so great, because he has an ability to do that. 40 points for Chris Middleton, 42 points for Devin Booker. And it brings me to this question, Dennis. Did the most deserving team win the basketball game last night? What do you think, Dennis, before I answer?
I'd say yes. I would say yeah. I know you're going to go into a couple numbers here real quick, but yeah, I would say the most deserving team won.
I would agree with that. I think the answer to this question is yes, but let me present this to you real fast, all right? And this is why the numbers don't always tell the story. All right? Field goal percentage for Phoenix, 51%. For Milwaukee, 40%. 3-point percentage for Phoenix, 30%. For Milwaukee, 24%. Free throw percentage for Phoenix, 84%. For Milwaukee, 82%. So in those major categories, Phoenix was better than Milwaukee. The Bucks took 10 more free throws in the game. All of these things have to be taken into consideration. Milwaukee took 6 more three-pointers in the game. But the Suns lost this game because they turned the ball over 17 times. And they really didn't get any major help for Devin Booker's spectacular game. You know, on the Bucks side of this, we have been asking for Chris Middleton to be the best version of Chris Middleton. After game 3, we asked Devin Booker to be the best version of Devin Booker because Devin Booker wasn't good in game 3. Devin Booker was great Devin Booker last night. But there really wasn't anyone else who made a significant contribution. Chris Paul struggled. He had 5 turnovers of his own. I mentioned the one late in the game. Only 10 points. I kind of thought Cam Johnson gave you what he's expected to give you. Right? Cam Johnson last night for Phoenix. 10 points for him. 2-for-4 from 3-point land. 4-for-6 overall. Had a couple of good defensive plays as well, I remember. 1 block. Okay? Jay Crowder, I thought, was good last night for Phoenix. I think he had 15 points, 8 rebounds. But there really wasn't a standout performance alongside Devin Booker to compliment him, right? And you kind of have to have that if you're going to win this series.
Yeah, at least Ayton didn't have a great game. Chris Paul obviously did not have a good game at all.
I mean,
so yeah, one guy can't do it himself.
Ayton was 17 rebounds last night. He played 39 minutes. I agree with Adam when he makes the assessment on Ayton. The most important stat for him is minutes played, because if he's on the court, he can get you rebounds. I thought he was a little shaky around the rim last night, you know, just finishing wise. And no one really had great success, I don't think. Points off turnovers last night, 24-5 in favor of Milwaukee. Fast break points, 15-0 in favor of Milwaukee. That all makes sense, given the fact that Phoenix turned the ball over 17 times. But the problem for Milwaukee early was they just did not take advantage of the turnovers. They got 19 more shots than Phoenix last night. So I think for a lot of the game, if you watched it, I'm not sure Phoenix ever really felt like the better team, even though they shot a higher percentage. They were higher percentage from three-point land. They held the lead for, I thought, most of the game, including the 9-point lead in the fourth quarter. But I never felt like Phoenix really had a grasp of the game. I always felt like it was kind of in limbo for them, right? Maybe other people felt differently than I did. So I think despite Milwaukee's inability to capitalize on turnovers last night and the fact that Phoenix had a lead for most of the game, I thought they were the better team for most of the game. So I do think that the most deserving team won last night. The other story last night, I think, is the officiating, which for me was wildly inconsistent in terms of what is a foul and what isn't a foul. Right? Not really in terms of how many they called on Milwaukee versus how many they called on Phoenix. For me, it was more, oh, you're calling that? Oh, you didn't call that? How did Devin Booker get away with the foul at the end of the game, which would have been his sixth to end the game? See, this is where the conspiracy theorists of the NBA come out when fouls like that aren't called. The other question I have, and listen, Adam ain't here to defend himself.
Yeah.
But he ain't the only one in this boat.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guard a downhill Giannis?
Prayer.
I think that's fair, actually. I think that's fair. I really don't know that there's a great answer for this. But I just say this. There was a point last night where Giannis gets the ball at the top of the key. He looks around. He realized there's no one closing out on him at the moment. He also realizes that taking three-pointers isn't his forte, mm-hmm. which he actually did early in the game. That's another part of this that we can get to a little bit later on. Remind me to ask Brendan about this.
Because
I've heard some polarizing opinions on Giannis, Jack, and three-pointers.
All right.
So anyway, Giannis gets the ball. He looks around. No one's pressuring him. DeAndre Ayton kind of shows himself right above the semicircle in the lane, right? And Giannis goes, well, I'm going to be Giannis here, which he should because that's what he does.
Yeah.
Right? Drive the basket, use your physicality, use your length to get to the rim. And DeAndre Ayton decides he's not going to be this punk-ass defender that everybody else talks about when we talk about taking charges, right? He decides, nah, I'm going to move my feet and I'm going to make a play here. So he does. And he gets called for a foul anyways.
Yep.
And I thought that was a very ticky-tack call on the part of the referees last night. I believe this was in the first quarter. People may remember this play that I'm referring to. So this is where I come in defense of the block charge call.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I understand what people are saying about it, that it often invites lazy defense where all you really have to do is kind of be out of the play, slide over for some help side defense, put yourself in a good position, and you can draw a call, right?
Yeah.
And I also acknowledge it is the most inconsistently called, probably inconsistently called foul or penalty probably in all of sports. Right?
It's up there, yeah.
I mean, it is a very difficult call to make. But I would argue, in that situation, I mean, first of all, you've got to have a protection for a guy like Giannis simply barreling over people,
yeah,
right? This isn't football.
Mm-mm.
But in that situation, DeAndre Ayton's best option, I believe, was to stand there and take a charge.
Yeah.
He got caught for the foul anyway.
Exactly.
Might as well try to draw one for yourself and your team. So, that is one scenario where I'm like, how are you supposed to guard Giannis? Even if you move your feet, mm-hmm, try to play good defense, you get called for these ticky-tack fouls anyway. So, I'm not sure how Phoenix goes about trying to defend Giannis. Maybe there isn't a good answer there. You know, maybe Ayton doesn't get that call anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the officiating last night was ridiculous. And I'm not even a referee guy. I'm not, necessarily a blame the officials type guy, right? But last night, I thought it was just wildly inconsistent for a lot of the game. Anyway, big win for Phoenix, right? They get to take this thing back home a big win for Milwaukee. Phoenix gets to take this thing back home and try to get a win on their home court in Game 5. This has been, I think, a hell of a series. Like, I know it's not the two most, sexiest teams in the world. I know that this probably isn't what the NBA wanted in terms of the stars and the markets in their NBA finals. But, man, for me, it's two really good teams.
Yeah.
With, I think, some really good players, evenly matched, I think, for the most part. We're getting to see a few players that we don't normally get to see a lot.
I think the fresh faces is a big thing.
Fresh faces is a big deal for me. I love seeing all the, when the Suns are at home, even when the Bucks are at home.
Yeah.
I love the old gear in the crowd.
Love it.
Some of the old Phoenix Suns gear, I think, is sick. Some of the old Bucks gear, like, what were we doing back in the day, with some of the, seen that one Bucks jersey with the forest scape or whatever you would call it on it, with the deer antlers on,
yes,
with the deer poking out. Like, some of it's just absurdity.
Yeah, like, who thought of this?
Yeah, what were we doing? But that's fashion. Anyways, great series, fun game last night. I want to get to some of the overreactions a little bit later in the show, Dennis.
Oh, there are some,
because there were a few.
There are a lot,
but. Good for Milwaukee for tying this thing up and probably giving us at least three more games and extending. You know what might end up happening? Mm-hmm. We might end up get extended right into football season.
Hey.
Which could be a good thing.
Nothing wrong with that.
All right, speaking of football, let's move on. Cam Newton was on KJZ this morning. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. The morning show on ESPN Radio, heard here on our Raleigh affiliate, 99.9 The Fan, and many of the same affiliates down the line here on the network. Now, we continue to talk about Cam Newton, and there's a lot of people out there like, why do we care? Why are we still talking about Cam Newton? He ain't our quarterback anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Plays in New England, right?
I fall into that category at times, I'll admit.
And for there's a part of that I understand, but the other part of that also is Cam Newton's a Carolina Panther. Right, he always will be. He's the best quarterback in franchise history.
Mm-hmm.
So when things come up for him, we talk about it. Also, I think there is a large portion of people who did not like Cam Newton, but I think there are also a large portion of people who love Cam Newton.
Yeah,
I fall into that camp.
Likewise,
I think he's a weird dude,
mm-hmm,
but as a player, I love him, and I am interested in him. Right. So he was on KJZ this morning, and he was talking to Keyshawn mostly about stuff. And let's just play this first one, because we played a little bit of Cam Newton stuff the other day. If he is still, quote-unquote, that guy.
It's no proving that right now, and that's where I'm at mentally. That's where I'm at, and understanding that, now with, well, I'd say a couple months before the season, everybody's looking for something to get excited about or rave about or just say, oh, man, that's BS. Who, we don't need him to be talking like this, or he doesn't need to be talking like this in early July. But, you know, the truth is I'm doing everything that I know to get myself to the position where I know where I need to be. And that's just to put this team in the best situation to win football games, and that's all that matters.
So my argument and stance on Cam Newton as a player. What happened?
Ryan Fox just birdied to go two under.
Oh, a birdie for Ryan Fox. Who is Ryan Fox?
I don't know.
Never heard of him.
He's two under, though.
Good job. Good for him. Birdie for Ryan Fox, the open chip. Did Ricky end up making us birdie? I don't know. We'll check on that. Anyways, my stance on Cam Newton as of late has been, I don't think Cam Newton is quote-unquote that guy anymore. I just think that he's body, his physical, the physical aspects of the way he plays are diminished, and at that point he can't be the same player that he used to be. Do I think there's a possibility that he can still play at a high level? Yes, I do, but I think we need to see that. Like, I think last year going into the season I felt a lot more confident about it than I do this year. I think Cam Newton is a fringe starter, potentially a backup at this point in his career. He's going to start in New England because they really have no other option. Mac Jones, I know they drafted, but they ain't going to start Mac Jones over Cam Newton on day one. Could that be the case by the end of the season? Yeah, I could see that. Because we don't know what we're going to get from Cam Newton. But I think another year removed from some of the health issues that he's had, I do think he showed us some flashes at the beginning of the season, especially last year. Another year in the Patriot system with Bill Belichick, I think, is going to do him wonders. I really think it takes about a year, basically, for anyone to settle into a new job. So I think there's a chance we could see a better version of Cam Newton this year that we saw last year. Is he the same player he was? No. And I don't think we're ever going to see that player ever again. Speaking of this kind of conversation, Cam Newton called this clickbait.
Man, listen, like, we're having this conversation in July. Like, I'm just being honest with you. This, it really is irrelevant as far as what I say right now. I mean, this
no, but
is
you're
probably
talking,
gonna be
but no, you're talking to me, though. We're just having a conversation.
I'm gonna put it in their perspective. Me having this conversation in July is irrelevant. You know, this is just going to be the clickbait for the next 24 to 48 hours.
Clickbait, I think, has become one of those sort of catch-all terms that oftentimes probably tells more about you than it does about anybody else if you're using it. Just saying that from a media perspective. But I don't think he's wrong here in the sense that basically whatever Cam Newton does and says, especially in July, they're going to run with it and make out of it whatever they want to make out of it. And so there's nothing that Cam Newton can say at this point in the offseason that's going to make anyone feel better about who he is as a player or anything like that. We're going to have to see it this year. And we'll see if he gets any better. I don't know. Like, he's the type of athlete to me who, because of who he is and because of his physical abilities, like, can, I think, still be an effective player, but just won't be the same player he was, you know, 3-4 years ago. Whatever it was.
Yeah.
So we'll see if he can do it. Megan O'Keefe is the Director of Communications for the North Carolina Courage. You can follow her on Twitter at Meg O'Keefe. I think that's how you say this. The NC Courage currently atop of the NWSL standings. They are coming off a loss last weekend, but they are back in action at home on Saturday night at 7 o'clock against the Houston Dash. And if you are not a fan of the North Carolina Courage, you need to do that because they are the draw in professional soccer in the state of North Carolina. And we bring Megan O'Keefe on because if you're not a fan of them, I'm going to give you another reason to be a fan of them. And that is because there is a new podcast in the WRAL Sports Fan family of podcast, the Courage on the Pitch podcast, which is led by Megan O'Keefe, the Director of NC Courage. And you can find that wherever you get your podcasts and WRALsportsFan.com. So, first of all, not to be a complete creep, but a quick Google / background check tells me you do this kind of thing. You host, you report, you play D1 soccer. So it feels like a perfect fit for you. How'd this all come together?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me on. Thanks for hyping up the podcast and the team. Obviously, so much to be excited about. So I appreciate that and appreciate the quick little Google search. Basically, my background, I grew up playing soccer, played D1 at American University in D.C. while also studying broadcast journalism. And fast forward a little bit, because of the pandemic, lost my job, but I started a podcast during that time because I had plenty of time to do it. So did some podcasting all of last year, really loved it, and then had this opportunity to work for the team and then to host their new podcast. So it all really came full circle, and I am just thrilled to be a part of it.
All right, so the first episode dropped today with Jessica McDonald. And I want to get to maybe you giving us a little teaser of what we can hear, but what kind of stories are you trying to tell on the podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for those who are fans and who are about to be fans of this team, you know that this team's obviously incredible on the field. They've won countless championships. They've got World Cup champs, Olympians, but these players have amazing stories off the field, and just learning about their journey to becoming professionals. So many of them have experienced injury and trade within teams, and it's just really inspiring to hear how they have come this far to now be a part of one of the best teams in the world. So those are the stories I'm hoping to share. I want fans to get to know these players off the field because they are such awesome people and humans. So they have so many stories to tell, and I'm, you know, happy to tell them.
Megan O'Keefe, Director of Communications, NC Courage, joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Who are the biggest personalities on the team?
You know, it ranges, but, you know, the name that comes to mind, she's won the superlative of funniest player on the team, is Carrie Recaro. So she's one of our center mids. I think she's going to get a lot of playing time during this Olympic period with some of our players gone. So Carrie Recaro has a huge personality, keeps the laughs coming on the team. She actually also has her own podcast as well called Butterfly Road. I'll give her a little plug there, where she talks about athletes and mental health. But yeah, her personality is phenomenal. Her and Ryan Williams together are hilarious. But those are just to name a few. The whole team is super entertaining.
You mentioned they're in this Olympic period, and I think that's like a huge part of the NC Courage, because there are so many players that play internationally and play for the U.S. team. I mean, I remember one day I was in a Harris Teeter and I saw Sam Mewis in there, who was like kind of a big deal. You know
casual,
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm like, here I am just like shopping for groceries, and there's Sam Mewis shopping for groceries right next to me, a person who just won a World Cup. Like, how wild is that to sort of be around these players who not only participate for the U.S., but like play pretty significant roles?
Right. Oh, I mean, believe me, I've had to tame my fangirlness for a while now at this job, because, I mean, I grew up playing soccer. I grew up being obsessed with the women's national team, the 99ers, you know, Mia Hamm, Brandi Chastain, all my favorite players. And now this young team that has emerged with Sam Mewis leading the way and all of their other amazing players. And for me to get to be surrounded by them at work is just such an honor. And I learned so much from them about how hard they work on and off the field. So it is pretty cool to see them. You know, it's like seeing your teacher out at a grocery store. It's like seeing them out in the wild.
Right.
Like, oh, they're normal people too. This is so cool. I shop for groceries. They shop for groceries. But yeah, things like that. It's really cool to see them on and off the pitch.
Yeah, I was like trying to creep on Sam's cart. Like,
what is she buying?
Yeah, what's in there? Like, are those frozen waffles? What are those? Megan O'Keefe, Director of Communications, NC Courage, joining us here. All right, one quick sort of heavy-ish topic that I wanted to get to with you. Because I think that the draw in American soccer is in the women's game. Do you think that's fair? And if that is the case, have we properly processed that and what it means, like, in this country? It seems like a pretty big deal to me.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, the conversation has been going on for years now about equality with men and women's sports in terms of pay and coverage on the media. And so, absolutely, the draw is with women's soccer. You see the best players playing for the NWSL and then, like you said, going on and playing for their national team. So it's huge here in the States. And I am, like I said before, honored to just be a part of it. And I love that now we have this podcast and, you know, WRAL doing a huge job stepping up and providing a platform for these incredible athletes. So, I mean, the future is looking bright for women's sports, but I agree. There's definitely a huge draw to it here.
I mean,
States.
The thing is, they win. You know, mm-hmm. the men's team doesn't yeah. win. And often, not only does the men's team not win, but they don't participate. Like in this Olympics or the last World Cup, you know? So I feel like it's the women's game, at least in soccer, that is a bigger draw than than the men's game. All right, so Jessica McDonald was your first guest in the first episode of the podcast. Can you give us a little teaser of something we might hear from the podcast?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I wanted to talk to her for hours. She has such an awesome personality and story. So we touch on, obviously, the state of the team right now, how they're doing. You know, they're at the top of the table, but she just talks about the courage culture, and they almost don't even recognize they're number one in the league. They want consistency. They care about their performance. So Jess talked about, you know, her role of being a leader on the team now. And then we really touch a lot on her being a mom and pursuing her dream of being a professional athlete as a mother and the challenges she's had to face also in terms of injury and being traded several times. She's played professionally for over 10 years now and has been on, I think she said, 9 different teams. So just right there, you know, she has seen it all. And so she talks about that. And then lastly, we talk about her business. She is a business owner. She runs an organization called Soccer Resilience, touching on mental health with athletes and parents of athletes. And so it was just an amazing conversation, and I hope everyone checks it out.
All right. Megan O'Keefe from the NC Courage is joining us. From your experience playing the game and just in general, for those who have not seen the Courage play this year, what's their MO? Like, how would you characterize their style of play?
They are battlers. Okay, to be fully honest, I'm sitting in my car watching their practice right now, and it is intense, always. They're just always intense. Whether they have the ball or if they lose the ball, you know that they are going to fight and be the first ones to win it back. So just little things like that. It's the little details. They're obviously individually super skillful, but the way they play together as a team and understand each other's strengths and play to those is just, it's beautiful to watch. It's magic.
Is this going to be a once a week podcast? How often are you going to be dropping them?
Oh, yeah. So they'll be dropped every Thursday on WRALSportsFan.com, on the app. People can watch video of it on 99.9 The Fan YouTube channel. And you can also find the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. So Spotify, all that good stuff.
99.9 The Fan, our Raleigh affiliate here on the North Carolina Sports Network. I noticed on your Twitter profile as well, it says you're an air fryer addict. I've never met anyone who dislikes their air fryer. You got a recommendation for me? And what's the best thing you put in there?
That's so funny you say that, because people are like, it's like a CrossFit person where they can't stop talking about CrossFit. Can't stop talking about an air fryer. So, oh gosh, where do I even begin? So I've learned how to make bagels in the air fryer.
Oh, congratulations. Bagels.
It's a secret. All you need is some flour, some Greek yogurt, mix it together, makes a dough. I get some everything bagel seasoning from Trader Joe's. Put it in a really ugly looking ball and it makes a bagel, kind of. But that's just one of many things I enjoy making.
A fried bagel. I've never had one of those. Is the air fryer talk, is that something we can expect in the podcast as well?
I may try to sneak it in here and there. You know, it's hard for me to not talk about it. I'll have to tame it for sure.
Also, the producer, Dennis here, Cox, today tells me you're an ally in the pancake versus waffle debate. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a pancake addict. I feel like I eat them for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It doesn't matter, whatever time of day. They're just so easy to make. And yes, big, big fan.
What's the deal with these waffle people? Why are they so, why can't they understand us?
Okay, if we're getting into the details here, you know, I want my syrup spread evenly. And when waffle holes carry more syrup in one versus the other, it just, you know, really ticks me off. So I can trust my pancakes to evenly spread my syrup.
Yeah, and I can always trust that a pancake isn't going to scratch the roof of my mouth either.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I'm not necessarily against a waffle. I'm just, you know, I'm here for the pancakes.
We had to pick one.
No doubt. Right. All right, Megan O'Keefe, Director of Communications, NC Courage. Follow her on Twitter, @MegO'Keefe. Did I say that right?
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure, my Twitter was hacked a year ago, so had to really get creative with a new name. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty active on Instagram as well. It's where I'll post a lot of updates from the games and everything. So that is Megan O'Keefe, MeganOkeefe on Instagram. So check it all out there, and also follow the team's accounts, NC Courage and North Carolina FC, our men's side as well. So tons of stuff happening on the social platforms.
All right, perfect. She is the host of the Courage on the Pitch podcast, wherever you get your podcast. The first episode dropped today, Jessica McDonald of the Courage. You can also find it at WRLSportsFan.com. Megan, thanks so much for jumping on. We appreciate you. Good luck with the podcast, and go Courage, I suppose.
Yeah, go Courage. Thanks, Alec.
Nothing more important than a trustworthy pancake.
100%.
And I also have to admit that when she said she learned how to make bagels in the air fryer,
yeah,
I thought she was talking about like just putting a bagel in the air fryer, not like actually making them.
Yeah. So yeah, she told me it's use flour, Greek yogurt, mm-hmm. It makes the dough and you form it, and then that's what you put in the air fryer, and that's what cooks it.
Dennis Cox, by the way, is producing this podcast.
Yes.
So if we can expect pancakes versus waffles and air fryer conversations, obviously a must listen.
Absolutely.
Last night's Milwaukee Bucks win over the Phoenix Suns to even the series in the NBA Finals at 2-2. And to do that, I welcome in one of three people I trust with NBA takes, Brendan Whitted from the League Pass Lair. That's Blackmail Pod, HUCosell.com. Did the better team win last night?
Yeah, team WNBA won, and they should have. Oh, my bad.
Dude.
It was such a great night of basketball last night. Like, the WNBA put on a masterclass in how to do the All-Star game. There's some context to that one. Like, I'm going to get to the NBA. I just really, just for 2 seconds, wanted to talk about that because it was perfect. They had the team WNBA, which was all the All-Stars that weren't on Team USA for various reasons, and they're it gave some natural adversarial stuff. So it was a good competitive All-Star game all the way throughout. And it does a disservice to the WNBA to always compare it to the NBA. But the NBA's All-Star game, for different reasons, is never as competitive all the way throughout. They usually turn it on. It was great all the way throughout. You even got the fun story of Arike Ogunbowale. She was cut on June 21st from Team USA, and she ends up getting the MVP for the All-Star game. So that was a nice little jab for her. And Allie Quigley got her third straight, final 3-point contest win. So that was a good time. But in terms of the NBA, they are playing better. Like, I don't know if they are the better team, because I just was surprised about what we got from Chris Paul. And he's had some turnover stuff the last couple of games, and they were able to overcome it in game two. But in game four, it was more than just the turnovers. He looked completely off, and I don't know if he has some sort of injury that people aren't sure about. I've heard stuff about some wrist injury or something, but even his handle, off of his handle, even when it wasn't a turnover, he just looked loose. It didn't look like the CP we were used to, and you know, they kind of got bailed out by Devin Booker in that second and third quarter. He ends up picking up that foul, one of his about 8 fouls that night.
Well, that's another discussion.
I mean, that was a rough, that was a high leverage moment to miss a big call. But like, they had gotten into this iso ball thing because he was able to do it. And they had stopped moving the ball. And essentially that's really what helped them win those first two games. It was them making the Bucks respond, making them collapse, and then kicking out to shooters. That's how you get Mikal Bridges with 19 points. And that's how you get Ayton doing so well, because those guys, they're not going to create offense for themselves. It's going to be based completely off of what the guards do. And they just weren't able to put that sort of stuff together. In part, let's not make this all about what the Suns didn't do. Giannis, goodness gracious, man. Like, he wasn't their high scorer. Chris Middleton, slow start, and again finishes like an absolute gangster. But Giannis, like, I had to go back and look at this. Giannis, with Giannis on the court, they are allowing their defense, the Bucks' defensive rating was allowing 1.06 points per possession. With him off, it's almost 1.3. He's making that sort of a difference on that side of the ball. The fact that we were questioning about whether or not he was going to play in this series, and he's given these sorts of performances over and over again, is really impressive.
Yeah, and then he comes up with, I think, the biggest play of the game, and what could potentially we could look back on and say, the biggest play of the series if Milwaukee goes on to win the series with that block on DeAndre Ayton with 1:14 left to go with a 2-point lead in that game. All right, let me ask you another sort of pointed question here, and then I kind of want to get into some more debate-worthy topics here. But was last night an instant classic?
I liked it a lot. That was a really uneven game.
I agree.
The first quarter, it was 23-20. Suns had 5 turnovers, kind of on their way to their 17 turnovers. It was a lot of physicality allowed in that game. And I know the Booker fouls at the end, you know, whether or not he should have fouled out. Yeah, that was a foul. But I mean, if we're going to go to, you know, revisionist history sort of thing, Jrue Holiday got away with a lot of perimeter grabbing and holding. He was really, really getting the benefit of the doubt that entire night. So it's hard for me to then point at Devin Booker at that specific moment and be like, yeah, the refs, they had it in right there, because the Bucks got a lot of those favorable calls. It's part of the reason that they got they had 10 or 12 more free throws than the Suns. They got a lot of those kind of – when their offense was struggling, they got a lot of those in the half court. So it was kind of an up-and-down sort of night. Enjoyable, classic. I'm probably not going to remember it as a classic game.
I'm 100% with you on that. I thought there were great moments in the game, but yeah, I thought there were some choppy moments. I mentioned to Dennis that if I was talking about this in hockey parlance, I would have called this a grindy game. I would have called it a little bit of a slog, just because it just wasn't always the prettiest of basketball. I don't think the officiating was very consistent last night. I don't even think the announcers talking about the officiating was consistent last night. There was one point where Devin Booker put his shoulder into someone along the baseline, and Jeff Van Gundy's like, that's not a foul. I'm like,
I don't see a foul. PJ Tucker running to get the offensive rebound.
I'm like,
and he like, Devin Booker doesn't even look for the ball.
Lowered his shoulder.
Like, that was some football. That was a football play.
That was a football play.
That was 100% a football play.
And that comes on the heels of JVG talking about how much they're letting go and, you know, the physicality of the game and all this and that. Like, I thought the officiating was just wildly inconsistent. And I'm saying that from the standpoint of, what is a foul and what isn't a foul? Not necessarily, you know, did you call this many on Phoenix or did you call this many on Milwaukee? But there were some other ones that I didn't like. For instance, and this leads me perfectly into this next conversation, because I don't know how present you have been with Adam and his stance on the block charge call. In his mind, nothing is a charge, right? So the discussion is basically moot, because you can't have it with him because he doesn't believe in him, right? But my question stems from this. How the hell do you guard Giannis? Because there was an instance, I believe this happened in the first quarter, and stick with me here for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis is standing at the top of the key. He's got the ball. He realizes that no one's coming out to pressure him. So he goes, okay, I'm going to take it to the hoop. DeAndre Ayton steps up above the half, the semicircle, right? And he decides, I ain't going to be one of these punk-ass defenders who just slides up here and takes a charge like all the anti-charge people complain about, right? And to some extent, I understand their complaint. So Ayton moves his feet, maybe bumps Giannis a little bit as Giannis comes barreling downhill, and gets called for a foul. I hated that call. And I would have argued, if you are DeAndre Ayton there, you should just stand there and get run over and take your chance that way, because you got called for the foul anyway. So I don't know that there's a great answer for this, but how do you guard Giannis when he's coming downhill like that?
The Giannis and Shaq comparisons can continue for me, because Giannis is quickly turning into the most difficult guy to officiate. Because he's not a jump shooter, he's almost always going to be, except for those times he just decides to be, you know, Steph Curry and just pull from three, he's always going to be one of those guys where you're like, well, is that a charge? Right? Because he's always moved to his left, moved to his right. Defenders don't all, I want people to get away from this idea that defenders have to be stock standing still to get a charge. That's not what a charge is.
Right.
A charge is when the offensive player initiates contact that grants them an advantage. That's what a charge is. And so if I'm DeAndre Ayton, I think you laid it out perfectly. His arms are to his side above his shoulders. You know, he's not reaching for the ball. Giannis drops his shoulder into Ayton. Ayton is simply trying to prevent him from going, having a direct beeline
right
to the cup.
What's he supposed to do?
If he can't do that, ask him to get out the way. Ask him to, hey, sit this play out. Let him get this highlight dunk, and then we can go on and play the Suns' possession. Because there is no way to defend Giannis if he's going to do that. Because keep in mind, that's what's going to happen with Giannis most times. No one's going to challenge him out on the three-pointer. They want him to take the three-pointer. And if the closer you get as a big, in particular, to guarding him on the perimeter, the easier it's going to be for Giannis to go around you, because he does have a lot of shiftiness. He's very agile. He's got a nice handle for his size, like, or for kind of where he is as a big man. So he's going to go around those guys. So what you would teach a big to do is stay in front of him and back up a little bit to around that free throw line, because you don't want to challenge him that far. But what that does is that gives him a runway. He's always going to have this runway, which is why it can be so peculiar to folks who are watching. Why doesn't he always go in? He's going to have this runway, and at some point he's going to run into a wall or just one person, as he did last night. If he's allowed to drop his shoulder and he's still going to get the foul, he becomes this impossible guy to officiate, kind of like Shaq did where he was backing guys down. It's like, well, do you punish him for being 330 pounds and just stronger than everybody? Like, there has to be some sort of come to Jesus moment for these refs about how they're going to officiate him. Because if they're just going to let him, you know, run to the free throw line every single time that he wants to just, you know, go barreling headlong into a defense, it makes for a kind of a choppier game.
Brendan Whitted from the League Pass Lair. That's Blackmail Pod, HUCosell.com. Follow him on Twitter at HUCosell. Couple more things. A lot of talk from people after games 1 and 2 about Coach Bud not making enough adjustments. Well, now Milwaukee has won 2 games straight. What are the biggest adjustments that you have seen in the way that Milwaukee has approached the last couple games?
They've played Lopez a little bit less than they did previously. Played 19 minutes last night. Was still minus 13.
By the way, I hit a ridiculous bet last night on Lopez. I had points and rebounds under 15.5 for like minus 112. He had 14 points, 1 rebound. Got it by a half.
That's how you do it. That's how you do it. And speaking of betting, I think the Suns were getting 4.5. So that last, I don't know, minute and a half meant a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah.
On that game. I'm completely
adjustments. Adjustments. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Playing Lopez less. Honestly, one of the biggest impacts, and a lot of people haven't really talked about it, is Sarge getting hurt. That has really meant a lot for the Suns, because they tried to trot Frank Kaminsky out there earlier in the series, and that was a no-go, and you really haven't seen him play at all. So what they've gone to doing is putting these Jay Crowder, Cam Johnson, 4-5 combos out there, which leaves them completely bereft of any sort of real height and size. And I think that's part of the reason that the Bucks end up getting 17 offensive rebounds in that game. Like, when you are outshot the way that they were outshot last night, they were the Suns shot 51% mm-hmm. from the field, and the Bucks shot 40%. When you have that sort of delta in between field goal percentages, it has to be something else that gets them back in the game. And it's the 17 turnovers and the 17 offensive rebounds, 17 Suns turnovers and 17 offensive rebounds that they garnered. And that is in part because they went small, and in part because they were trying to hide CP3 on PJ Tucker. And so even though Tucker didn't take a lot of shots, he was instrumental on the offensive rebound. So he's going and barreling in every single time and still making an impact. They're having to be so small because they simply don't have anybody besides Ayton to throw out there. Keep look on his minutes and how he plays throughout the series. He wasn't quite as sharp as he usually was last night either, even on some of those short pick and rolls. He just couldn't seem to find it. He got some smalls on him. They were switching 1 through 5 as well. The Bucks had started off switching 1 through 4, and putting Brook Lopez in the drop whenever there was a pick and roll sort of situation. Part of the reason that he's not playing as much is because they want to switch everything. But even when he's out there, they're allowing Ayton to get, you know, Jrue Holiday or PJ Tucker or Connaughton is going to get is going to catch Ayton on that short roll, and they've lived with that and have lived pretty okay with it. If he can't get back to the sort of field goal percentage and sort of efficiency he had shown earlier in the playoffs and even earlier in the series, the Suns are in a lot more trouble, because it turns all onto the guards. And with Chris Paul playing like this, that means it's all on book.
Brendan Whitted is joining us here. All right, last thing for you. Oh, what do we have, Dennis? Is that for Patrick Reed's duck hook drive just then?
Yeah, he just put one into the crowd.
Okay, well, I don't know where Patrick Reed is in terms of the score right now.
Not great, Bob.
Yeah, I think it was like even par or somewhere around there. Anyways, all right, last thing for Brendan Whitted from the League Pass Lair. That's BlackMailPod, HUCosell.com. I'm kind of fascinated in a weird way by Drew Holiday's role in this series for Milwaukee. How would you describe that? Is it really just what they need him to be? Or because it feels like he's taken somewhat of a I don't know. I don't even like really to use the term backseat necessarily for him, because really the Bucks need Middleton and Giannis to be their two best players. But Drew Holiday's a hell of a player. And he, you know, he's just kind of faded into the background a little bit. How do you see what Drew Holiday has been able to contribute for the Bucks so far this series?
Well, keep in mind, you see, he's faded into the background. He had the second most shot attempts for the Bucks last night. Mm-hmm. He just didn't shoot well. You know, I mean, he was 4-20. Yeah. But like, he just didn't shoot particularly well. Didn't shoot particularly well last game, but still had, I think, 17 attempts. Yeah. He's still putting the ball up. He's just really struggling on offense, and he's missing shots that he normally would. So maybe some of that defense that he's putting on, you know, in terms of picking up CP3 full is wearing on his offense, because they normally would need his offense. But you know, he's had an effect on CP3. Again, I'm not sure all of that is Drew Holiday defense. PJ Tucker played on him on CP3 a little bit as well, but they do need him to be a great perimeter defender. They needed him to be a lead guard in that finish close to the Atlanta Hawks series. Again, Giannis was out, so they needed more from him. But I thought when Giannis came back, and I think he was 4-10, Drew was 4-10 in that first game, I thought, okay, he's taking that back seat again now, because Middleton's there and Giannis is there, and they're always going to have more shots and more usage. I think they are happy that he's giving them on defense. I don't know how many more these sorts of poor shooting games they can stand. I like that he's staying aggressive. That has been my biggest complaint for him throughout his career, is that despite his skill set, despite him being a quality and efficient scorer, he can sometimes fade into the background and not take enough shot attempts. He's not doing that here. He's just not hitting anything, and that it was okay for game four, right? Game four was sloppy. You either go up 3-1 or go to 2-2, which is obviously a vastly different mm-hmm. scenario. And so maybe it was just going to be bad and rough for everybody. But yeah, I think they want a little bit more efficiency from him, but he's been great defensively.
Brendan Whitted, League Pass Lair. That's BlackMailPod, HUCosell.com. Follow him on Twitter at HUCosell. Brendan, thank you, my man.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting ADAM to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app. Or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.